Mrs. Fishel, reel 6.
My little nephew, he was 15 at the time. They promised me that he would stay in Theresienstadt with my mother, but 3 days after I left, he was put on the last transport out from there, and we have never heard from him again. Although one searched for him after the war, there was never any possibility to find out whether he ever arrived in Auschwitz or whether he was gassed, or I know nothing about him. Now, the arranging, the organizing of those transports was left to the Jewish transport department. And this must have been a dreadful work for the people who organized that, who had to put down, collect a list, collect the people. They sometimes had transports only for women to join their husbands who had been taken away a fortnight before. They were told the husbands were in labor camps and they would be allowed to join them. So these women and some of the children voluntarily offered to go. And of course they never met their husbands again, and they were never taken to labor camps. So they just went straight either into gas or into other camps. There was also one transport which was taken to Switzerland. Now, the Swiss Red Cross had arranged for these transports. The first, I was told, left Theresienstadt. They chose the people there. They left Theresienstadt, but never arrived in Switzerland. They were just gassed in another camp. Whereas one friend of mine, she and her children were got through to Switzerland and remained in a Swiss sort of refugee camp there until she joined me afterwards in the flat I got in Prague when I returned. I arrived in Prague from Theresienstadt with a very bad hernia, which had happened on one of the transports either to or from Auschwitz. I forgot to tell you that before. This hernia, when I didn't walk or didn't have to carry anything, it did not worry me very much. But then, starting a new life in Prague, it did worry me. So I went to our former friend and surgeon, and he put me into the Jewish hospital where he was a surgeon and operated on me. And I found other friends there. That is another story again. This is really one of the muscles were so weak through the undernourishment and the not working bodily, just sitting all day long, wherever I was, first in Theresienstadt in the painting studio, in the art studio, and afterwards in Oederan with pneumonia in the sick bay, had of course disrupted all my muscles. And consequently, this, because I lost weight so rapidly, I had this hernia. This is, I'm told, happens when you lose weight, you get these hernias. And now that was repaired when I arrived afterwards in Prague. This is an answer to your question. I had forgotten about it.
Now, you said earlier that you knew about people being thrown to their deaths in the quarries in Mauthausen. How did you get to know these details about camps to which you had never visited?
That is hearsay. One heard these things, rumors, And now that one afterwards, when now after the war, with all the films and the lectures, one hears about it now. This was confirmed. They were only rumors. There were in Theresienstadt itself. You had the wildest rumors. You knew things which were true, and you knew things which were not true, because there were hidden radios in Theresienstadt, where some people snatched up news from abroad, and then with the wild imagination of hungry and desperate people, these rumors were augmented then, and you heard all sorts of stories which probably were never true. On the other hand, I had, before I came here, I had no idea of Normandy and the troops coming over the English Channel. I had no idea of that. I didn't know how they could come. On the other hand, when I was in Oederan, the German workmen sent me little scraps of newspaper, and there I read that the dome in Salzburg had been bombed, which made me very angry, because I loved Salzburg and I thought it was silly to bomb the dome. A few things one knew, and very many one did not know. And so when I came over here, of course, I tried to find out about everything, and I still learn every day something new.
But whilst you were a prisoner, did the prisoners have a fairly good idea of which were the bad camps and which were the less bad camps?
Only rumor. And as I told you before, I did not mix very much with people in the so-called Jewish government in Theresienstadt. I only met my artist friends in the painting studio, and I don't listen to very much gossip, because if I do any painting or sculpture, I am so concentrated that I don't know what is going on around me, and I now very often hear of things which I had no idea about in Theresienstadt. The rumors went around. I listened to them. Sometimes I believed them. Sometimes I did not. For instance, when I arrived in Auschwitz, I had no idea about gas chambers. Whether other people knew on that transport, I do not know. I had no idea, and those young girls who were with me, Lisbeth and Edith, had no idea either. So I cannot... about Mauthausen, I knew about that Mauthausen had these quarries. I had learned that in my school days, and I had heard that they were the prisoners of the camps there were used to quarry, and quarrying basalt and granite is a very hard work for people who have no food. And to get rid of them, we were told, one just threw them into the quarries and left them there when they couldn't work anymore. That's all I know about it.
When did they take the Jewish Star from you?
When we arrived in Auschwitz, everything we wore, of course, was burnt or taken away. And when we left Auschwitz for Oederan, we got clothes, hardly any clothes, but nevertheless a coat and a summer dress, and a pair of pants from Auschwitz, and there were no Jewish stars on it, and we were told, because we work in a camp with German workmen, foremen and workmen, they were not supposed to know that we were Jews from a concentration camp, but that we were criminals who were coming out of a Czech prison, and that we were to work in their factory there, in their ammunition factory. That was the reason why we had no Jewish stars. But of course, the women did tell those workers, and the workers were not at all I personally had nothing to do with them, because I only was 1 week at work and then had the pneumonia. But my little friends who brought me their presents, they said they were not anti-Semitic at all. They helped those when they heard they were not thieves or murderesses, but just Jewish people from a concentration camp. They were only helpful and not no enemies at all.
How did the guards behave in general? Were they sadistic or unnecessarily brutal, or did they try to be as kind as possible within the limits of what they had to do?
There again, I had so little experience. In Theresienstadt, I had hardly anything to do with the German guards. They just came in to watch when we painted or to watch when we had the showers. But I had nothing personal to do with them at all. On the transport from Auschwitz to Oederan, I told you of these Austrian boys, so they were just kind and helpful. In Oederan itself, there was this Dorley who had been pressed into being a ward. She was kind and helpful. Marion, who was in charge of the whole camp, she was not kind and not helpful, but very good in organizing a clean camp. And if she had her way sexually, as I think I mentioned before, then she was happy and easy to get on with. If she was frustrated or in a bad temper, she kicked the girls who cleaned up her room. But there was, I personally had never an experience. I was never beaten, I was never maltreated, not once. And that is a question I personally cannot answer.
Did a special camp language or vocabulary develop?
Yes, it did. It did. It was especially in Theresienstadt, where you had a mixture of Czechs and Polish and Russian, not really Russian, Polish and German and Dutch and French Jews. There were words which kibbutznik was everything with a nick at the end, ik, because it is Czech. But there again, I'm not the right person. I did not mix enough with other people. I had my mother, my husband, my nephew, and my friends there, and we just spoke our normal German or Czech language, which we used to speak at home. And in my workshop in the studio, in the art studio, we spoke German without any special, because we had a lot of people from Austria there, artists from Austria there, and Joel Speer from Holland, who spoke fluent German. So there we spoke German. But there were...
Did the liberation of the camp take you by surprise? Did it come suddenly?
The liberation of Theresienstadt? No, well, we came back from Oederan. It was so-called liberated. The Germans had been kicked out. They ran away because they were afraid. What did they have to do there? So the day I arrived there, it was in a purely Jewish hands, in the Jewish government's hands, there was, and one waited. And the next people were the Geneva Red Cross, who helped, and a few days later the Russians liberated officially, but it was a very scaring way they did liberate, because one was afraid of raping and stealing and so on. The troops who came in, the Russian troops who came in, were a mixed lot. And the language, of course. So the liberation was no happy celebration, certainly not. And what we see in films, in the Holocaust films, I don't think it's very true. In the one big Holocaust film, which we saw here, the end was quite different. But then again, I left before the Theresienstadt was shut down completely, so I do not know anything about the last days of my own experience. Because I left before with the help of of the chauffeur and my friend in Theresienstadt, and just with a knapsack on my back and a little hold-all in my hand with the few possessions I had left over, I walked to Bauschwitz to the train, got into a normal train because the chauffeur had sent me money, bought my ticket, got into a normal train to Prague, and came to the railway station in Prague after an hour's ride or an hour and a half, and took a tram and got to the house which had belonged to my husband's firm, where a flat was waiting for me. That's to say, a small flat where the governess of my children had lived during the war, and I had a roof over my head and a bed and a bathroom. And this is how I came back. And then, of course, the sadness and misery only came. And that was something, another experience that was quite different than that was when you relax, if all the fear is gone, which was perhaps not quite right, but it was gone, and you come into a decent bed and have a nice, the first warm bath, you suddenly give in. And that happened to me, which was very painful.
When Theresienstadt was liberated, do you know if any revenge was taken on the captors?
I know, for instance, that there were Germans round about Theresienstadt, of course, who had been settled there during the war by the Germans, and some of the girls and young women and young men from Theresienstadt ran out, cut off their hair like ours had been cut off, and let their fury loose. That again made me very miserable, because I thought, well, now we do to them what they did to us. What was the whole thing for? I think that was quite wrong. And I had long discussions with those women who came back shining eyes from outside the walls of the fortress where we lived, saying she kicked these women or cutting off hair and stole the bread and so on. I must say I was very distressed when I heard that. But that is really, whether there were any other revenges, I do not know. These were petty things. This was really only petty for personal, high-spirited revenge, if you call it that.
Do you think that your period of imprisonment changed your attitudes?
Completely. I have a completely different knowledge of life, aspect of life. I think, I watch things I'd never had to do before that, and perhaps I'm more tolerant, or try to get to the under the surface of why things happen, and try and always, wherever I am, but that is my nature, make the best of what there is. That has perhaps nothing to do with the concentration camp, but certainly I learned to see and appreciate know about misery and about what the human being can stand and how people react, some in a good way, some in a bad way, and that I think one cannot even blame those who react in a nasty way, because it is just people cannot stand everything. But it surely has changed me, and it is the experience of my life, of course. And one cannot, even if I talk like this, one cannot express what has really gone on. It is quite. I remember coming here and going to the National Gallery, and when I got into the Rembrandt room, I suddenly broke down and sobbed. And my brother-in-law, who was with me, he could not understand it and was very embarrassed that I sat there with the tears pouring down. These are things which now, of course, not anymore, but one was terribly, highly strung because of what one had seen and experienced, I expect.
Do you think it changed your attitude towards religion?
I always had a changed attitude towards religion. Yes, again, more tolerant and more interested in difference of religion. I afterwards, here in England, I tried to make up for that and went to lectures on comparative religions and philosophy of religion, because when I was in Öderan, in the sick bay, I think I told you that one of the foremen there sent me the Bible, the New Testament, and I read the New Testament and had time and the nerves or the relax. I was relaxed enough to read it and think about it, a thing which one in normal life does probably never have. Yes, it did change my attitude to religion, because I take it much more seriously than I did before. And the differences between Judaism and Christianity and Hinduism and Buddhism is for me highly interesting, and I can understand, I think I can understand all of them.
No.
One thing I'd forgotten to mention, that when before the Swedish Red Cross came to Theresienstadt, the whole place was beautified, cleaned up, flowers were put into windows, paper flowers, but also fresh flowers, the bakeries were cleaned up, everything was made ship-shape for the Swedish Red Cross to see. I think it was sent out, also Danes, I think the Danish king had, the king of Denmark had something to do with it. And then we were told to make a report, illustrated report, like a holiday brochure of Theresienstadt. And my head of department, Jo Speer, made beautiful, I think 12 or 15, very beautiful, elegant drawings which were then stone printed, lithographed, and in I think they made 10 or 12 albums of it, and my department had to hand color them because the lithograph was only black and white, and my specialty work was painting light blue or a darker blue sky and all that. That went on for hours and hours. That was extra work in the evening, and we got special sausage for that, and got some specially good coffee to keep us awake. People thought it was really horrible. I found it quite amusing and enjoyed these happy scenes, which in reality were not as happy. They were just an eyewash. But I quite enjoyed painting skies. I learned to paint skies very well by a very great artist who, alas, was killed in Auschwitz afterwards. I know that because he was transported away to Auschwitz before I went. Of course, at the time, I didn't know what Auschwitz really meant. But I know that Mr. Otto Kaufmann was sent off, and one of the friends I lost and missed very much.
So this was a propaganda thing?
That was a propaganda thing, and there were lots of problems. Like those shops were also propaganda things. They were also arranged for that particular visit of the Red Cross, and they stopped afterwards again. They were shut down after a while. All that was propaganda.